You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is the Speak for Yourself podcast featuring the best of Colin Cowherd and Jason Whitlock. I'm your host, Jason McIntyre. It's hump day, middle of the week, huge sports news. Cowherd missed it because he's out today. Christine Leahy filling in. Folks, we finally have it. Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather. Let's get to the show. Whitlock calls it. LeBron James will end his career with the LA Lakers. Fox Sports Radio host Doug Gottlieb claims the Warriors have the perfect fit of players and system. Interesting conversation about whether or not athletes should speak out on social issues, prompted by what Michael Bennett said on a radio show, The Breakfast Club. Former Super Bowl champ Seth Joyner is back on the show to debate whether or not the Cowboys should sign Colin Kaepernick. Another Super Bowl champ, Eric Davis, makes the argument that Odell Beckham Jr. has matured. Ready for Speak for Yourself? Whitlock, take it away.
All right, hello and welcome. We're joined today by the host of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio, Doug Gottlieb, and by Fox NBA analyst Jim Jackson. Let's start in the NBA, where there's a lot of speculation about LeBron James' next move after his latest finals loss. I said yesterday that LeBron should sign with the Lakers, and now the White Mamba himself, Brian Scalabrine, says he's hearing that LeBron's move to L.A. is right around the corner.
I'm hearing that he's going to do this for one more year and bolt to L.A. He has a house in L.A. His kids are enrolled in school in L.A., even though they don't attend the school. So I'm hearing Cavs, you know, one more shot at beating the Warriors, and then he's off to la-la land.
I have zero problem if that is the plan. I think it's the perfect plan, to be honest with you. I think he's repaid his debt to Cleveland by bringing a championship, three straight finals. If he does another year, four straight years there. And I just think there's a history of whatever the biggest show is in basketball, it ends up in a Lakers uniform. From Will Chamberlain to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to Shaquille O'Neal, those guys all came via free agency in some capacity. There's a whole list of former MVPs that end up in a Lakers uniform. You got to have a big show here in L.A.
I wish we could pull back the tape a couple weeks ago before the finals started, because I said right then, if the Cavs do not win this series, we can start talking about when is LeBron going to bolt from the Cavs and keep chasing rings, which, like you, I have no problem with it. I have no problem with what Kevin Durant did. But let's be honest, he values winning over loyalty when it comes to basketball, maybe not in his personal relationships, but when it comes to basketball. And we saw that after the press conference, and he was saying, I did everything I should. I played well. I can put my head down at night and sleep fine, basically throwing his teammates all under the bus. And by the way, he puts his teammates on the bus when they need to be put on the bus, too.
I just want to know why my name wasn't on that list as far as notable stars joining the Lakers at the
MVP.
End. You know, you said notable star. But, ironically, with LeBron James, and Doug, you've been around this enough to know, nothing can surprise you in regards to what he's going to do or what he's not going to do. And it's hard to read into his interviews because he's cautious at some aspects, but then he'll lead you on at another. Jason, I agree with you. He's done his job in Cleveland. Now, how much of it, too, because he's so loyal to that community, to pull away at the end, I think one more year and they don't beat Golden State, they don't make the right moves to get the right people. Could he look? Yeah, but I think this is going to be critical to what they do this summer into regards to what the next 3 to 5 years look like for LeBron James in Cleveland?
Leverage play. I mean, he's a businessman. It's a leverage play. And what does he want? He wants better teammates around him that put him on an even playing field from his perspective. And what else does he want? He wants to own that team.
Big time.
He wants that team. It's the ultimate payback for Comic Sans is he wants Dan Gilbert's team and whatever it takes to get it. And if it takes him walking out the door and going to a Laker uniform and then coming back when the team's value sinks, that's a possibility. Or it's just, hey, wink, wink, nod, nod. The old Joe Smith deal in the top of the dresser drawer that eventually he'll get an ownership stake and it will be his team. I think ownership and the ability to pick who replaces Kevin Love, because that's the only real movable piece on that starting lineup that they can move. I agree. It makes sense to end up in L.A. Why wouldn't you? It builds his brand. It's the place he wants to live. It's the only major market he can really go to, right? Like, he's not going to go to New York play for Phil Jackson. He's not going to go to Brooklyn. He's not going to go to Chicago. So the only is L.A. And the Lakers, with Magic Johnson, they're on a two-year plan to get him back to being playoff-worthy. And if he's there, along with a Paul George or somebody else, it'll all make sense. But I think that the start of this, it's a leverage play. He wants it out there that L.A. is a possibility to motivate them to fix the team and potentially sell them the team.
Well, also, too, keep an eye on this. David Griffin, July 1st, contract is up. What happens in this situation if he stays or if he goes? Who replaces David Griffin if they don't re-sign him? All you're talking about power play moves, is it someone that adheres to what LeBron and his team wants to do moving forward in regards to the ownership aspect?
See, I don't think he's the best player that I've ever seen. Jordan's a better player, in my opinion. And I think he does lack some of that killer instinct. But he's an incredible businessman. He has a great business sense, and he understands how he can leverage his power. And whether it's smart or not, I honestly think that's what's at stake here.
It could be. He already gave Cleveland their championship, so I think all will be forgiven. But he always is chasing that ghost of Michael Jordan. And so he needs to do the kind of Hollywood thing. So LA is a perfect destination. And we're talking about the Lakers, but I wouldn't rule out the Clippers either, because could you imagine how big of a hero he would be if he got the Clippers championship?
I think that it's not about rings if he leaves Cleveland. I think it's just about chasing money at that point. And you can make more money sitting out here in L.A. More of his business interests, I think, are out here in Hollywood. I think Maverick Carter has a home out here. The stuff they're trying to do with movies and documentaries and all mm-hmm. that other stuff. And so I think LeBron will give it one more go to get a ring. But moving forward after that, particularly if it doesn't happen, it's just going to be about where he can make the most money, where he can max out his brand so that he can buy not the Cavaliers or some NBA team at the end of his career.
I also think, though, you make an accurate point, and I agree with you. The only way I'll disagree with you, Christine, in terms of the Clippers is you can't go play for the Clippers if you're LeBron. You can't go play for the Nets if you're LeBron. It's just not. The Clippers play in the Lakers arena. It's always...
But he could be responsible for changing that.
It's great. You're never really going to change it, right? Like in New York, you play for the Yankees. You don't play for the Mets. You play for the Giants. You don't play for the Jets. You play for the Cubs. You don't play for the White Sox. In L.A., we all know. You played for them. I grew up here. You play for the Lakers, not the Clippers. Right, if the Clippers are the
Lakers. We got to move. Well, LeBron's not the only one looking for a way to beat the Golden State Warriors. After a historically dominant run to the finals, Commissioner Adam Silver recently said that the rest of the league needs to catch up with the Warriors, adding, quote, "It's about raising the bar for all the teams in this league." So it's clear the commission is putting the onus on the rest of the league. And we got into this yesterday, I think, with Chris Broussard and Jim Jackson, and it made me think, everybody in the league, there's all this conversation about personnel. Paul George, Jimmy Butler, Gordon Hayward. And I think the way to catch the Warriors actually is style of play. I think their style of play is what elevated Klay and Steph to a level where they're superstars, elevated Draymond Green. I think teams need to look at, and LeBron James, and the Cavaliers, the Washington Wizards, every team, the Clippers, style of play, that ball movement and man movement that the Warriors have embraced, I think is the best shot for any of these other teams.
It's amazing you point that out, Jason, because a lot of people missed on this. They don't play like other teams. They run the fewest number of pick and rolls of anybody in the NBA. And what why do they do that? Because they don't have one ball dominant guard. Don't get me wrong, Steph pounds it and he plays a little bit different style. But I think there's two things that limit other teams from playing that style of play. personnel does. You know, like Christine's been crushing Chris Paul. He dribbles too much. Like, who else are you going to have make plays based upon their personnel? So the first thing is personnel. The second thing is the other thing that some personnel lack, if they haven't spent time in college, they don't know how to move without the basketball. And running, they just run a traditional very motion cool. offense. And most of their, I think all of their guys have been 3 or 4 year players. College mm-hmm. players. And so they have really good feel for off the ball movement and cutting and reading a defense, as opposed to, as great as LeBron James is, he's not good at moving without the basketball. As good as Kyrie Irving is, 1 year at Duke, 11 games, whatever he played, mm-hmm. not good at moving without the basketball. There's a, Adam Silver talked about this, I think, on Colin's show the week before, and he was right. There's a childhood arrested development sort of part to it, where they're missing these formative years of teaching guys how to play basketball. They're all good at dribbling. They're all good at shooting and playing off the pick and roll. But playing without the basketball, you only learn that the college game, and that's what's missing from personnel as well as style of play. Well,
Jason, I think you made a really good point. We're all focused on rosters, and admittedly I was too, but maybe they do need to change their style of play. And one thing I give them a lot of credit for that's really hard to find in the NBA is guys that are willing to set aside their ego to play with each other and mm-hmm. give up their points and give up their stats and even sometimes their money. And what the Warriors have done is pretty unique. I don't know that that's going to be possible anywhere else.
Well, you can't duplicate it. Let me tell you something. I played in Sacramento with Bibby, with Chris Webber, with Vlade, Doug Christie.
Great.
Very similar.
Yeah.
No, but culturally very similar. All of us got along. We hung out together, which is kind of
different
in the NBA. You can't duplicate that because you have to have the right kind of players that understand that Pete Carrillo's offense doesn't work for everybody. But because we had the right personnel, it worked for Sacramento. It's the same thing with Golden State. Houston wants to play up and down. They don't have the right personnel. Cleveland at times wants to play. Washington wants to play. The unique part about what Golden State is able to do is the personality-based system mm-hmm. is guys that are willing to give up something. They have a special niche. They do it well, but they support each other. So everybody wants to do it, but again, going back to your point, the right personnel enhances the right system.
Yeah. But hold for 1 second, Jim. I read the Zach Lowe's great story at ESPN about Kevin Durant had to be taught to play the Golden State way. And it was a seamless transition. But they did had to teach him, no, man, just don't go set up camp in the corner. Once the ball doesn't come to you, go screen for someone, go move. It can be taught.
But he had the skill set, though. You see, understand what I'm saying? Right. He has a unique skill set that fits within that system. I don't care. Some guys, you can put Paul George in that system, it's not going to work. Because his skill set doesn't fit what Golden State wants to do. No matter how much you teach him, he's not going to be as effective coming off catch and shoot as Kevin Durant would.
The perfect example is people are like, why didn't Oklahoma City play this way when they had Kevin Durant? It's like, mm-hmm. well, because they had Andre Robertson, so he can catch the ball, but nobody's going to guard him. Right? Steven Adams, he can catch the ball in the perimeter, nobody's going to guard him.
You're missing the big one.
Huh?
Russell Westbrook doesn't allow you to play that way.
I understand, but, yeah, same, right. but like, would you, if you want to get the best out of Russell Westbrook, you got to give him the basketball, right? Like, that's what he does best. So Jim's point is, like, you're not wrong. Like, their style of play is different, and it is effective. And by the way, like, all you practice in defense professionally is playing against the pick and roll, and then you play the Warriors, and they don't run a lot of pick and roll, and mm-hmm. so you're not as prepared for it. But they also have they have Andre Iguodala, who can play 3-4. He's playing center, essentially, in game 5. They have Draymond Green, who he's not a great player, but within the confines of their system is a perfect fit. And so it's the personnel and the system combined, not just one.
I just don't want to see all these teams jump ship on their long-term plans to try to right now beat the Warriors. I just don't, it's not possible. I think you got to look for the long-term and stick to it.
But again, I think it's also short-sighted just to think I'm going to go get this piece or that piece and we're going to do it. You had a great stat today on The Herd about in games 3 and 4, LeBron James and Kyrie Irving dribbled the ball more than the entire Warriors team. Yeah. It's the style of play that I think is costing these guys more so than personnel.
Are you going to be the one that tells LeBron to move the ball?
Yeah, someone needs to. All right, welcome back to the show. Seth Joyner and Jim Jackson are back with us. Let's move to Michael Bennett, the Seattle Seahawks defensive end, who went on The Breakfast Club yesterday and discussed a wide range of topics, including the issue of athletes using their fame as a platform for social change. Here's what Bennett had to say.
when you got a platform like we have, you have to be able to speak up on those issues, because there's so many kids out there that's wanting to know what's going on, hoping that we speak on it. And when we go into the community, it's a time for people to see that we're real and that we are part of the issues. And I think that's important for to use our platform that way.
Well, Jason Whitlock thinks otherwise.
Of course, Jason Whitlock thinks otherwise. Nobody really likes Jason Whitlock. I think he's one of those guys that believes, because if you're an elitist, if you have money and you don't have to consider yourself to be involved with the black community as much as you should be. And I think that's opposite. I think when you're in a position, you have power, it's important to go back into the community and make sure you inspire kids, not to be a role model, but to inspire them to be different. And hopefully it changes the culture. It changes the way decisions are made, and you give them opportunity. So they say that LeBron James shouldn't be affected by the N-word written on his house. Is one of those things I think that's kind of stupid.
Because he didn't see it, they said. They erased it before he seen it.
And how can you tell somebody what affects them and what doesn't affect them? That's just ridiculous.
That's the new generation. I think everybody tells people how they should feel, how they should be. And at the end of the day, it's what makes you feel a certain type of way.
All right, I watched the entire 38-minute interview, and there was a lot of it that was good and actually stuff that Michael Bennett and I and even Charlamagne Tha God agreed upon, particularly about the use of the N-word. But he's misrepresenting my argument, one. And then two, I think where athletes really struggle, there's so much media pressure. Speak out, speak out. And speaking out is not the best thing we can do all the time for poor people. Speaking out may make someone feel good, but actually involving and doing things that have real impact, and that's why I celebrate LeBron James for the work he does in Akron with young people, and providing them scholarships, getting involved in their schoolwork, and trying to have real impact with poor people and people from the communities we came from. Speaking out is something that we can easily do. Actually getting involved and using our wealth and our platforms to promote real change is more difficult. And that's what I'm saying. The calling's different. Speaking out, there was a time for that in the 60s where it had real impact. Now, it's just something, in my view, people do for Twitter retweets and popularity.
Well, there were two different conversations, I think, that were going on in that interview. And to me, it also looked, and you know, you can defend yourself, so I don't need to, but it looked like Charlamagne was trying to bring up a situation where he can talk about you again, and it didn't really have place in the conversation, but while we're bringing it up, let's go for it. I think that racism still is a huge issue. And there are not enough people that understand that. And so that's why I see when guys say we need to speak out about it, it's because we want to show, like, no, it's still a problem. There are a lot of people that really don't think so. And, you know, I know I have things that I wish I could talk about and social issues I would want to talk about at work and use my platform to get that out. But you also have to think of it very carefully and what's going to be the best way to get it out so that it can reach as many people as possible in the most positive way as possible for change to happen. And when you do it in a certain way that invites controversy and attention on the wrong thing, I think your message can be lost along the way.
Well, there's no doubt about that. You know, when you look at Colin Kaepernick, to me, the method got in the way of the message. Him taking the knee got in the way of what he was really trying to get across. And a lot of times, you know, that happens. The problem with speaking out is that you get people talking about it, but there's no action behind it. I agree with you, Jason. People talk about things, you know, let's start a dialogue. But starting a dialogue doesn't change anything in some of these communities.
It's easy.
It doesn't change anything. So how do you move people from speaking out and creating dialogues to actually getting something done? That, to me, that's the big deal. And people don't change until they make it up in their mind that they're going to change. You can't make people change. Generationally, when you talk about racism is something that's taught. Young kids don't come into this world with that mindset. Their ignorant parents teach them ignorant things. They plant these ignorant seeds in their mind, and it just keeps turning over cycle after cycle after cycle until that kid moves away from that and sees the world from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And until you get people to start changing the way that they look at people and understand that, you know, under this black skin and under that white skin are all the same things. When people start looking at it differently, looking at it from that perspective, then we can bring change about, real change.
Well, change comes to a knowledge and understanding of who you are. Christine, to your point about a lot of people don't think that racism exists, well, it may be on the other side of the aisle in regards to white Americans, because they don't see it on a daily basis. in our culture, we do see it. I grew up in a neighborhood where we got bused and shipped to a majority white school. It was totally different. But one of my best principals, men I knew, was a white guy named Mr. Hart. He didn't care what color you were. But the teachers had to evolve around us as inner city school students coming in. We adapted. They had to adapt differently. Athletes speaking out have to be careful on a couple aspects. One, you got to know what you're talking about, first of all. Mm-hmm. Know what you're talking about. But also, too, I think you can use the platform because with Muhammad Ali, Jim Brown, those guys, Bill Russell, they are Oscar Robertson, they experienced racism in a whole another level where Oscar Robertson couldn't dress in the same locker room, couldn't maybe sit on the same bus. So when he spoke out about it, he felt it. He meant it. If you don't feel that part of it when you're speaking out, if your impact is not really felt authentically, you're not going to be genuine enough for somebody to latch on. And you can use your platform and your wealth only so far. But I do agree. Athletes, know what you're talking about. Feel it, do it, believe it, live it. So when you're talking about it, it comes out authentic.
I would just like to see athletes move to the understanding. When you acquire the kind of wealth and attention that they have, they need to understand the power of that and the impact they can really have on this society. You talk about white people don't experience racism. And there's some truth to that because, one, white people depend on other white people. They're not out under our control or looking for us for jobs. And until we get into the mindset of we got to be self-sufficient, that's the best way of limiting the impact of racism, is us being able to take care of ourselves. Because, again, if we're just going to sit around and, oh, someone called me a name and we need to have a press conference and talk about that and let's talk about name calling and blah, 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 that's not it. That doesn't move us anywhere because, again, I've tried to say it and that no one wants to deal with it. They want to reduce my conversation down to something really stupid. But I keep saying mass incarceration. That's what's really impacting black men. I didn't hear Michael Bennett bring it up during his 40 minutes today. All this conversation that we're promoting never seems to get to the real issue. Again, some people think it's police killing us. I don't think that's the real issue when the numbers show we're killing ourselves at a rate far more than the police are. We never get to the real issue.
Well, part of the real issue, too, is growing up in a central city, we still had public schools that taught us, okay? With urban flight, what happened is the tax base left, okay? So now your schools are going to suffer. You don't have enough money. So now schools are closing in the central cities. You're not getting quality education. Young kids are not going to school. Guess what happens? The crime picks up, okay? Now you have a detriment to society, younger parents. So if we don't start from an education perspective, we're spending all this money on a lot of other things, space programs and different things, but yet and still in central cities all across the country, schools are being closed down. Teachers are not getting paid. So how does it affect our young people? There's an example. You're talking about figuring out ways to get it done. You got to start educationally.
If athletes were talking like you and using their platform and using all those different examples, I think we would all be seeing a lot more change.
Yes. And what just got said here in 3 or 4 minutes, go compare that to the 40 minutes of The Breakfast Club. All right, welcome back to the show. Eric Davis is back with us. We're joined now by the founder of The Big Lead, Jason McIntyre. Let's move to the fight world, where Yahoo is reporting that after about a year's worth of rumor and hype, the long-awaited match between Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor is now set for August 26th in Las Vegas. The terms of the deal are still unclear, but an announcement is expected from Mayweather via social media as early as this evening. I gotta admit, I'm excited. It's going to be a great event.
Oh my gosh.
Everything that happens before the fight and after the fight is going to be awesome. Floyd's going to clown him once in the ring, but I enjoy the stuff before and after the fight.
Well, it gives us something to talk about, which is why the timing is very interesting. They obviously waited until the NBA Finals were over and the talk had kind of died out. So now we can talk about something for the entire summer. But I think that the way that they should have ticket prices work is you should pay for it like you're going to dinner, where you pay afterwards and not before. And they should do it, I want to say by seconds and not even rounds, because I don't think it could really last that long. But I think Floyd might give us a little bit of a fight. Let us have our money's worth and see a couple rounds before either Connor gives up or Floyd knocks him out.
Am I the only one picking McGregor?
And then you can say, Eric,
you're not on board with McGregor?
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Mayweather hasn't knocked anybody out in 6 years.
Boxing. This might be the one.
It didn't matter what two sports you're taking. If you cross genres, I'm going to take the one that remains in theirs. But the one thing, I'm going to wait for the highlights. I'm not trying to go to Vegas. I can't wait for the highlights, and I'm hoping.
You're not going
to
buy the fight.
Why would you ever spend money?
No, I'm not buying this fight. I'm waiting for the highlights, and I'm hoping, exactly what you said, that McGregor just gets frustrated because he can't hit him, but he snaps, and he goes MMA. That's what I'm hoping. I'm saying it might be a kick in the head. He might choke him out. So the wording in that contract better be right.
What happens when they...
Super Bowl level hype. You know that, Whitlock. You'll be there. Front row probably, right?
I don't think it's going to be Super Bowl level hype.
It will be if he choked him out.
I would give anything to see Connor have Floyd in a rear naked chokehold. Like, that would be worth the money.
That's what I'm waiting for the highlights.
That I will not spend on this fight.
You know it.
McIntyre, why are you picking McGregor?
I mean, well, 500 plus 500 as an underdog? You know I love a good underdog. So I'm all in on McGregor.
You just love giving away money.
I want to see Mayweather go down. Aren't you guys kind of sick of him? He's a boring fighter.
It's going to take a kick to the head for him to go down.
Which isn't allowed.
I'm not a Floyd Mayweather fan.
It said boxing rules.
But it's a boxing match. I just don't see McGregor. It's the same if LeBron James decided to play quarterback.
Oh, exactly.
And Tom Brady decided to play power forward.
Well, I mean, LeBron was an all-state receiver. Yeah. Oh, God. Jump into the NFL and dominate.
It doesn't work that easy. You can't just switch over. If this fight were MMA, then I would be like, okay, I don't want to go see the fight, but McGregor's going to win. And that's the case. But I'm hoping, I'm praying he snaps.
I'm going to be interested.
These tickets are going to be so expensive. Yeah. And there's a chance that you could maybe see 30 seconds of action.
Oh. Listen, I'm going to say that I'm going to end on a more serious note. What I would be a little bit concerned about, listen, the black-white dynamic in the fight game has always been at the heart. And so I hope we just don't see more racial division over this fight. That has always been, I can remember when Larry Holmes and Jerry Cooney and me and my best white friend argued for an entire year with me. Larry Holmes was gonna kill Jerry Cooney. And I was a big Magic Johnson fan. White people were Larry Bird fans. That's always been at the heart of sports. I wonder if this thing will go there. That would increase the hype, but Floyd's gonna kill Conor McGregor. All right, welcome back to the show. We're joined now by two Super Bowl champions, Seth Joyner and Eric Davis. Let's move to Colin Kaepernick. On Monday, I surprised a lot of people by saying that the Dallas Cowboys are the perfect fit for the activist quarterback because their brand is far bigger than the controversy that has derailed his career. Now the sporty news has jumped on the Whitlock bandwagon saying my idea could actually save Kaepernick's career. Oh. People thought I was crazy. I'm telling you, Kaepernick to the Cowboys is a movement I can support. People think I just hate Colin Kaepernick. I thought what he did was stupid. I don't really want to see his career end. I do think he could be a good backup in the right situation, and Dallas is the right situation.
I don't want to see his career end either, but I think in the situation of Dak Prescott, he already had to deal with Tony Romo as his backup quarterback, and now to put in Colin Kaepernick, like, the guy has done absolutely everything he should to get everyone's respect, so we got to respect him back. And for Dallas to put a guy like Colin Kaepernick behind him again, just creating more of a kind of a media firestorm around him. I just want Dak to be able to do what he can do.
Go ahead.
You want us to, like, make things easy for Dak?
No, it's not even making it easy, because I do think that there are better quarterbacks, skill-wise, that you can put aside from Colin Kaepernick. But it's just that, like it or not, it is going to invite some controversy and some media attention to the backup quarterback. And I think that Dak Prescott has handled everything perfectly, and he's such a stand-up guy. Let's get behind him and not have such a firestorm be about the backup quarterback.
Well, I don't believe that a firestorm is going to ensue with Colin Kaepernick unless he's on the field. Just as long as he's holding the clipboard and there's no helmet on his head, he's safe. As far as Dak is concerned, the NFL is the type of league where guys are coming up behind you all the time trying to steal your job. That pressure is always going to be there. If he has two or three consecutive bad games, he should feel the pressure. You know, he earned the job. He played well last year. But they need a backup. They need a guy that if Dak goes down, if this team is primed for Super Bowl right now, if he gets hurt, who do you put in? Do you put Brandon Weeden in? I don't even know if he's still on the roster or not. But do you put him in as your guy that's going to carry you to the promised
land? You can call CBS.
This guy's already been there.
Call CBS because apparently he's ready to come back whenever Dak gets hurt.
You guys are missing the main aspect of all of this. This is not about protecting Dak and his feelings. That's just not a part of the league. But it is about making certain that your quarterback establishes himself. Dak Prescott has one season under his belt. He is the chosen starter right now. He is not an established starter. So a couple of bad games. I don't think it's the place for Cap because
Tony Romo just retired.
Hold on.
Think he's the established quarterback.
No, he is the chosen, and you keep talking about him coming back. And I think if Tony Romo was still on that roster, Tony Romo, they would be concerned about him being the starter. Mm-hmm. Dak has not established himself yet. He's had one good year. So if you bring in Cap, a couple of bad games, now you got this, should we play this veteran guy or here? That's why I keep saying Seattle is a better team. Why? Because he fits the system, but you have an established starter. A couple of bad games, you don't question whether Russell Wilson is your guy. That could happen if you get off to a few bad games for a team that's expecting to go to the Super Bowl. You could now have a quarterback controversy. Dallas doesn't need that.
But if you're primed and you're ready, don't you want to have that luxury of having that extra guy that if Dak steps back, if he regresses, if Dak gets hurt, that the rest of the team and the organization doesn't suffer because you've lost that one guy?
Is that Kaepernick, though, or are there better quarterbacks out there?
There ain't nobody out there right now.
Yeah, no.
But you
me?
Could, people.
And we.
Go ahead.
You know,
not
the problem
even you
is people.
That line.
And I'm not just like blindly, you know, supporting Kaepernick. But people talk like this guy can't play the game. You know, you got to look at the overall spectrum of what happened. He lost a great coach and a great mentor when San Francisco, when York and Balky ran Harbaugh out of San Francisco, okay? So since Harbaugh left, what kind of coaching has he had? No, what kind of development has he had?
Seth,
Thomas Sulo?
But Seth, listen.
Chip Kelly?
But Seth,
come on.
Seth, listen to what you're saying. That's my point because he can play. I actually think behind that line with that run game and all the things that he has, an established wide receiver, established tight end, that he actually could play. So since your quarterback has not done anything, he's got 1 year under his belt.
Would you stop?
I'm not going to stop. Dak,
stop,
Dak has not established himself as an every year,
this,
every
Eric.
Down guy yet.
Let me say this, Eric. The man played well last year. With Tony Romo and a conversation every week about Tony Romo. Dak
hold on. That's
pressure
one,
for lunch,
that's one
breakfast,
season.
And dinner.
I remember when they were saying the same thing about Colin Kaepernick a few years ago when he took the 49ers to the Super Bowl. Okay, I remember the exact same thing being said, that he was the next wave, that this is the new age. He was on the cover of every magazine. It's one season.
Year.
It's one season.
Okay, I get that, but I'm just saying, Dak Prescott has not folded under any pressure that's been put on him. So why would we think Colin Kaepernick, that just won one game a year ago,
can I tell you something else, too? He had no pressure on him last year.
He had Tony Romo.
Dak had no pressure. Dak was the backup. He was the rookie, fourth rounder. He was the backup. And if he had a bad game, he goes to the bench and the starter comes back in. He had nothing to lose. Now he has pressure.
Let's take Dak out of it and look at just the distraction then to the rest of the team. If you're constantly having that quarterback battle, like you brought up, what happens when Dak's hurt? And then you're, does Kaepernick go in or Dak's having a bad game? Do we put the rest of the team has to answer questions about that?
I'm not a believer in distractions. I get so sick and tired of hearing the media and even coaches talk about it. Distractions are nothing more than scapegoats, okay? You got a job to do on Sunday. You step up, you do your job for 3.5 hours, and you go home. If you're distracted, then your mind is too weak to play the game of football because you get paid a lot of money to play a game, and you're distracted?
The Cowboys love distraction, though. That's what they live for.
This is the Speak for Yourself podcast featuring the best of Colin Cowherd and Jason Whitlock. I'm your host, Jason McIntyre. If you've been listening to the podcast, you already know you can catch it every single day on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, and YouTube. And of course, we're all over social media, and we are geeked for Mayweather-McGregor. Listen, I know you heard me take Conor McGregor and underdog. I just don't buy this whole he can't hit him, it's going to be over in 30 seconds. Floyd Mayweather can't knock anybody out. Hasn't done that in 6 years, and now he's going to knock out a UFC fighter? UFC fighters take way more punishment than boxers. I don't see how Mayweather's going to knock him down, and McGregor's not one to just roll over and quit. I mean, listen, when the whole world is going one way on a sporting event, make sure you go the other. Talk to you tomorrow.